All right, it's at this time of the weekend that we cross to our EWN correspondent, Gavin Gray, for a wrap of the top stories making headlines in the UK and Europe. A very good morning to you, Gavin Gray.
Hi there, Sarah Jane.
How are you?
Yeah, all right, thank you. All right, the spring weather continues apace, so
yes.
Things looking up. It's still quite cold for May, but yeah, the week gets warmer as we go on, so that's good.
Good news. All right, we're going to start with celebrations for the UK government. Why are the Tories celebrating?
Well, they're celebrating because we had during the week the local council elections, and in England they have done extremely well. Normally, during sort of midterm of one government, the party is tends to suffer at polls, be they local councils or anything like that. But actually, they did rather well. Plus, there was a by-election, meaning an existing member of parliament stood down. And that member of parliament was from the opposition party, Labour, but a Conservative got the post. So the government got one more MP. Again, very unusual for a midterm by-election. Normally, the government's really hit hard with those. But it isn't all plain sailing, because that was all in England. Labour, the opposition party, kept control in Wales. And as you know, there is a call from some in Wales that they should be independent. Mm. But the big thing, which I think will now dominate the news agenda for years to come, is Scotland and the calls there for independence, because the Scottish National Party, which wants Scotland independent, only just managed to fail by one seat to get an overall majority. They will form a coalition with the Greens, and the Greens have agreed that they should be independent. And I think now we're going to see this dominate politics. Certainly Boris Johnson is calling the Scottish leader, Nicola Sturgeon, today, and is asking for a meeting, saying that he wants to work with Team UK and not to ruin the progress of the pandemic and centuries of being a union by calling now, during the middle of this pandemic, for a referendum vote.
Yeah, okay, that's going to be an interesting one. How is the relationship between Boris Johnson and Nicola Sturgeon?
Not good.
Not good.
More, people in Scotland do not like Boris Johnson.
No.
And so consequently, he didn't even go north of the border during the election campaigning because he's just seen as a figure that would lose the votes instead of gain. In the end, the Conservatives in Scotland actually held their vote, but as I said, it was without Boris Johnson's name on their literature.
Yeah, persona non grata. So voting then in the Scottish Parliament election has ended, and now the counting of the ballots begins.
Yes, and absolutely. So they've virtually got all the results in now, and it looks like Scotland is heavily going to be dominated for a fourth term by the Scottish National Party. But also with the help of the Greens, as I said, they are going to have an overall majority of people who want an independence referendum. Now, both Boris Johnson is saying, look, he's written in the papers this morning as I look at them, saying an independence vote would be ripping our country apart and it would be irresponsible and reckless. And he said there's really we need to concentrate on how to overcome the problems or challenges of the pandemic and to the economy post-pandemic. But Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the Scottish National Party, is saying there's no democratic justification for blocking an independence vote, but she does need the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson's permission to hold a referendum, and he has said, no, I'm not giving you that at the moment.
Chatting to Gavin Gray this morning, it's 9:15. Gavin, of course, joins us at this time every week for an update on the stories making headlines in the UK and Europe. A concern for you over there, us over here, and also, as we heard earlier this morning for Australia, this version of the Indian COVID variant, which has been discovered in the UK.
Yes, and there is thought to be a hot spot now in Bolton, which
in
is Bolton, in the north of England, where they're really concentrating on doing mass testing there at the moment, because that has a high area of ethnic diversity, and it is also home to many from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, of those origins. And, of course, that has meant, prior to the flights being stopped, and quarantining being enforced, there was lots of family visiting going backwards and forth. So a problem has led to the fact that this variant, known as B.1.617.2, appears to be spreading much more quickly in the UK than other variants. Now, we don't think that this variant is immune from the vaccine, okay. So that's great news. Yeah. But it does spread very quickly, and of course, the problem of one of these variants that may eventually arrive that spreads faster, but also is immune, as it were, to the vaccine, then that is a real problem that all, I think, nationalities really, really are concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely. We heard earlier with our Australia correspondent about wealthy people in Thailand who are taking vaccine holidays where they are able to go to places like Russia and the US because they're sick and tired of waiting for the vaccine to become available in their home country. And instead now a thing called vaccine tourism seems to be taking hold. And wealthy Thais are making their way to places like the US and Russia to get vaccinated. But now the UK's largest tour operator has said that it's going to subsidise the cost of COVID testing for those who book package holidays with them.
That's right, because the testing is extraordinarily expensive. So at the moment, the list of foreign countries is split into three, depending on the rate of COVID vaccinations, the number of deaths, etc., in those countries. The government released its green list, and that means that effectively you don't need to isolate or quarantine when you get home, that is therefore a much easier country to go and visit. But there were only really one near country, Portugal, was on that list, but Spain, France, Greece, other very popular holiday destinations were not. And indeed, a couple on that list, Australia and New Zealand, of course, have banned visitors. So they themselves have banned visitors. So even though they might be on our list of good places to visit, we can't go. And it is our time now, May, when people are booking their summer holidays. Mm. But the problem some face is that if you go to certain countries, then you've got to take up to three COVID tests. And each of those tests here in the UK can cost up to £120, so 2,400 South African rand per person. So imagine if you're a family of four, all of a sudden your holiday costs have an additional massive spike on them. Plus you've got to quarantine when you get home, which may mean you get no pay at work. Or, of course, if you go to some of those countries like India or Brazil, which you're not supposed to go to, you've got to pay for a hotel quarantine when you get back. And that really is much more expensive. So one big group that is a tour operator, the largest in the UK, called TUI, is offering test packages for between 400 rand and a little under 2,000 rand to make those holidays more affordable. But as I said, the other concern is that these tests are so widespread and now going to be so popular, particularly with the summer holidays coming on, there is a big fear that the testing agents simply won't be able to cope and that people won't get their results back in time to get on their flight.
I used to work for TUI back in... when I think it was called Thompson, it was called something else. I think it might have been called First Choice or something. When I was a student, I used to work in the... in their complaints department, responding to people who were writing in to complain about their dreadful holidays. And I tell you what, some of the complaints had me crying on the floor. They were so funny. That's just an aside. I don't know what was. And I used to reply and sort of say, oh, terribly sorry, but we can't give you your money back. Right. The Bank of England is predicting a massive boost, a fastest growth for the UK economy in more than 70 years because of the lifting of COVID-19 restrictions. That's terribly ambitious.
Yes. What's rather interesting about this is that because people who have been in work in the UK all have been furloughed, so that's where the government agreed to pay part of the salary, providing your employer did not make you redundant. Mm-hmm. The intention, of course, was to try and keep people in work and to hope that they would be there once the pandemic was over. Anyway, because of this, people's spending has dramatically reduced because there hasn't been the thing. The shops have been shut. There haven't been the things to spend your money on. So there is said to be billions and billions of pounds that has now been saved by Britons because they've been unable to spend it. And instead of what my mum said, which is always, you know, well, save for a rainy day, spend a bit, but also save for a rainy day, which has been great advice over the years for me. The Bank of England is confidently predicting people are going to go spending crazy. And there will be a bounce back boom because, of course, if, for instance, you spend on an extension to your home, that could mean that you're employing builders. If you go buy a new car, of course, that could mean you're helping support the motoring industry here in the UK. So after a 9.9% contraction in 2020 because of the pandemic, that was the biggest contraction in 300 years, sure, they now say at the Bank of England the economy is going to expand by 7.25% this year.
Wow.
And that is a massive, massive boost up there, and actually is much bigger than the initial forecast that the Bank of England put out. The only problem, of course, is unemployment, because they do believe that despite the furlough scheme, once all the furlough schemes end, unemployment is likely to increase. So up from the current 5.5%, maybe as far as 7.75%.
Well, we'll see. We're going to end with something fishy.
Indeed. Indeed. So I hadn't even heard of the Tweight Shad.
Well, you're a fool. Everyone, of course, has heard of the Tweight Shad.
No, it's one of the UK's rarest fishes, and it's part of the herring family. And it was once very common in British waters, thousands and thousands of the fish migrating upstream in spring. But the problem was that in the 19th century, some of the rivers had weirs put on them. And, of course, the weirs pose migratory fish big problems. And one of the fish that really suffered was the Tweight Shad, as it's known. It really seen as something that many people would love to see back in, along with more salmon, lamprey, and eels, all of which get stuck by these weirs. They can't get around them and go further north. So what they're doing is cutting waterway passages around the weirs in order for the fish to be able to swim upstream further. And they really do believe that this could see a large area. They're starting with the River Severn, and that's going to be 241 kilometers of new river opened up for the fish. And if successful, they will look to do it in other rivers. But certainly, there's absolutely no doubt that fish species, very much like this one, have been decimated by the act of putting in weirs. And now they're hoping, after all this time, that they might be able to do something about that.
Mm, good. You'll remember this, Gavin. There used to be an advert in the UK, I think it was for the Yellow Pages, an elderly gentleman by the name of J.R. Hartley was wandering. Do you remember that? Do you have Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley? I discovered only a few days ago that J.R. Hartley was a fictional character. I thought that was a real person, that old man that appeared in that advert.
I'm sorry to shatter your illusions.
Absolutely devastated. Ho hum. Anyway, we'll chat again next week. Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Take care now.